listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, winter driving conditions are a challenge not just for humans, but also for designers of self-driving vehicles. We'll find out how Finnish researchers are trying to design a car made just for harsh Wisconsin-like winter weather. First, as we near the end of the year, we wanted to hear from legislative leaders about the big issues of 2017 and their goals for the new year. Today, we talk with Wisconsin Assembly Minority Leader Gordon Hintz, Democrat from Oshkosh. Last week at this time, we heard from Wisconsin Senate President Roger Roth, a Republican representing the Appleton area. Representative Hintz, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, one of the big stories of the year that still isn't quite done yet is the Foxconn deal. It was one of the biggest votes in the legislature. We'll be watching that as construction moves forward. All but four Assembly Democrats have voted against that. You are in the seat of one of those Democrats now, Peter Barca. You've replaced as Assembly Minority Leader. How are you going to be watching, monitoring that Foxconn project now as it moves forward?
Well, the legislation is passed, the contract is signed, but the enforcement and accountability that needs to be done is really what we're going to be focusing on. It's important to remember that even under the best case scenario, Wisconsin taxpayers are out up to $3 billion and that it'll have a 25-year payback. In addition to that, we learned that the governor is going to raid funds from the State Highway Rehabilitation Fund to put toward local roads that support Foxconn. So we're going to keep highlighting the fact that this is now costing over $4 billion of taxpayer money, and we're going to make sure that, you know, to the extent that we can, we're going to enforce and keep accountable every decision.
And you mentioned transportation funding, and that was one of the other big stories in the legislature this year through the budget deal. Again, transportation, I don't think anybody came away feeling like that was solved. What do you want to see moving forward when it comes to road building, road maintenance funding in the state?
I want to see the challenge solved. I mean, this was the issue of the session. It's been punted on since the governor was elected, but at the beginning of the 2017 session, everybody said transportation needs to be solved. We can't keep kicking it down the road, driving up the cost of projects, borrowing more money, letting our roads fall apart. And yet, for the fourth straight budget, Governor Walker and the Republicans absolutely failed. And the problem's only going to be worse in the future. And so when you govern by ideology, it's the Wisconsin, you know, residents who lose.
Well, on a practical level, would you want to see either lower priorities on roads or more revenue? And if more revenue, where does that come from?
Democrats have been willing to come to the table for whatever resolution is necessary, and it involves more revenue. That can be done a variety of ways, but, you know, it's a fake argument to think that we can continue to borrow money, to delay projects well into the future, to try to patch potholes and act like we're going to have a 21st century economy. We make things in Wisconsin. I'm from Northeast Wisconsin, and getting those goods to market requires safe, efficient infrastructure that we're really, you know, letting fall by the wayside.
Is this an issue, you think, in the 2018 election?
Absolutely, because I think the public has heard for eight straight years about the importance of getting this done. And the fact that this governor, from a leadership standpoint, has been unable to lead the state, and from an infrastructure standpoint, I mean, we are seeing more cones, more delays. The Milwaukee interchange is going to be delayed. And I think when the public sees that they're getting money taken away from their projects to pay for local roads that support Foxconn, I think people have had enough.
I want to turn to a couple of national issues and how they're playing out here in Wisconsin. On the national level, the Me Too movement has brought sexual harassment and assault to the forefront, including in politics. Late last month, Wisconsin legislative leadership from both parties came out to say the legislature will continue the policy of not publicly releasing info about sexual harassment complaints. Critics are saying, some people in the media are saying, hey, the public has a right to know. What do you think about that?
Well, look, this is obviously a very serious issue, but it's also a very complicated issue. And here in the legislature, we're taking it very seriously, reviewing all of our HR policies, making sure that we're doing everything possible to make this a safe and healthy workplace. As the leaders, we look to balance the need for a confidential process that gives victims a safe place to report while also keeping the public informed and holding abusers accountable. you know, HR has indicated that when people come forward, they're usually less likely to file a report because of concerns about confidentiality and privacy. And so we know there would be costs associated with people being willing to come forward if they know it's just going to be released to the media.
And new training on sexual harassment, lawmakers, I understand, and staff will be attending. I mean, is that something that's going to be enough to prevent this from becoming as big an issue in Wisconsin as it is in national politics and in other state capitals?
Well, look, something that we probably haven't done enough, and I'm committed to working with the Speaker and the leaders over in the Senate as well, and making sure that it isn't just a one-time thing, or it's, you don't get handed a packet of papers when you start to work in the building, but that we're always continuously taking the feedback of people and making sure that they know the channels available to them to be able to file a complaint should there be something in the workplace that makes them uncomfortable. So I think we're going to try to do it at least annually, but we're really getting a lot of good ideas, both from HR and, you know, from other people. This is something that's happening around the country.
We're talking to Assembly Representative Gordon Hintz, a Democrat and Assembly Minority Leader. And then also at the national level, a new tax overhaul coming out of Congress. How do you see this affecting Wisconsin?
Well, I think it's going to impact the entire country. I mean, if you ever wondered where Donald Trump and Scott Walker stand, a budget is about values, and tax changes like this are about values. If you want to reward the wealthiest individuals, the people that are getting by, doing the best right now at the expense of the programs that benefit working people, that benefit opportunity, this is your roadmap. I think it's incredibly dangerous and destructive. If you see a lot of the articles that are out there, long-term, it has the ability to dramatically change so much of what our country was based on in terms of the funding that's available for programs. I mean, it is really going to shrink the revenue that's available. It's going to blow the deficit up, and it's probably going to increase the inequality that exists between the wealthiest 1% and everybody else.
We spend a lot of time talking about partisan debates in the state legislature, but over the last year, we've brought in pairs of legislators, one from each party, who are working on bipartisan legislation. Do you think, even amid some of these other contentious issues we're talking about, there's room for a cooperation on important things here in the state?
Absolutely. And it happens on a daily basis. Obviously, there are some major differences, especially when it comes to a budget and, policy values, but there are plenty of things that impact all Wisconsinites that don't really belong to either party. There's a bipartisan bill that we're trying to get passed right now to stop big box retailers like Walmart or Menards from getting out of paying their fair share of taxes and shifting the burden to residential taxpayers. And, we're trying to get that passed. It's had a hearing in both houses. And, of course, if we don't act, you're going to see the tax burden shift, from those companies to individuals. And I think that's something that everybody recognizes would be a bad thing. And we're hoping to get Governor Walker's support to help get that done.
We're knocking on the door of a new year. What are some of your legislative priorities for 2018?
Sure. Well, obviously, that dark store loophole that I just discussed, which is a little complicated, but it's gotten some attention. But as Democrats, non-budget-wise, we think there's a lot of programs out there that would address the challenges that we face in the state right now. We've got more than 1 million student loan borrowers that are saddled with debt, that are unable to, buy their first home, to even move out of their parents' home. That's really hurting our economy and hurting their ability to move on. We know that working families are supporting with the high cost of child care, so we've got a child care tax credit that we think, again, would help support the economic security of so many families that are not seeing their wages gone up and are, really struggling to get by. And lastly, the expansion of the Family Medical Leave Act, which, again, would provide more flexibility for families that are out there. We really look at our agenda as supporting opportunity, opportunity, fairness, and equality in the state.
I want to wrap up with some pure politics. I'm guessing you watched what happened in Virginia, their elections there, the special Senate election in Alabama. Are you and other Wisconsin Democrats thinking you might follow their lead?
Well, we're very interested. Each state is different, but Democrats have won 33 legislative seats since Donald Trump got elected. And in places like Virginia, they won seats that were very Republican seats. Again, we're different demographics than Alabama and Wisconsin. We think that 8 years of Scott Walker has been too much and that the Walker-Trump agenda is out of line with how most Wisconsinites feel. But we also know as Democrats, we're going to take our message to the people. You know, we think the longstanding values that support natural resources in our state, good infrastructure, and a strong university system are things that people want to see happen, you know, not what we've seen over the last 8 years. So we're going to put ourselves in a position to succeed. I will say the energy and excitement that we're seeing from people throughout the state is very encouraging, and you know, we're hopeful heading into 2018.
We'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
All right. Thanks for having me, Rob.
That was Wisconsin Assembly Minority Leader Gordon Hintz, Democrat representing Assembly District 54, which includes Oshkosh. Last week at this time, we talked to Wisconsin Senate President Roger Roth, a Republican representing District 19, which includes Appleton. You can find both of those interviews at WPR.org/Central Time. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's executive producer Erica Janik.
Tina Bowling grew up challenged by both whites and Latinos about her identity. Her household identified as Chicano, but she wasn't raised knowing Spanish. She explores that tension in the poem she's sharing with us today and tells us a bit about its creation.
On the road away from my Midwest home, sitting in a cafe on the U.S. East Coast, I order my tea, buy a book, and sit and write a poem. Then Spanish hits me, first like a chirping of pretty tunes, and I love it. I close my eyes for a second. It smells like busy kitchens, crowded streets, and warm smiles. But this is different, because we are on a college campus. This is Castilian Spanish. I laugh at my thought of chirp, chirp. I type, continue on with my poem in Ingles. Soon, my subconscious lays out a welcome mat, as if waiting for this moment. I know if I silently, patiently waited, it would come to me. I chuckle at their teasing, talk of school, professors, wishing I could join them, but knowing I wouldn't. I'm not fluent. They fly higher than I do. Their words transform into a context that can store in my stomach, nourishing the corners left unswept. Undiscovered, I guard them there, won't claim them, because they aren't mine. I am always reminded of that. This isn't mine. They are the breadcrumbs to part of my heritage, one I was blended into, that welcomes my brown hair and eyes, my Latina hips, and hard-to-place facial features, until I speak. I don't speak Spanish. I hardly move nor look up, afraid to disturb this moment, afraid it might fly away. I want to enjoy it in its natural environment, not caged in a novella or recorded in a song. I enjoy the natural rhythm. It plays on my olive-colored skin. La música enters my body, or my body entre la música. No sé, just is. I want to capture this moment. I write quickly and quietly. Tap, tap, tap. They leave. A void enters the room. I am way too familiar with this void. The air falls heavy on my shoulder. I stop writing. Their currents. The thought crosses my mind to toss the breadcrumbs, the same ones shared with me, hoping to bring it back. But some things cannot be captured to be enjoyed, only missed. What this is capturing, some of the pieces that you feel like you're missing because you don't quite belong. I'm mixed race, multiracial, and so are you enough of this? Are you enough of that? I felt like I was challenged, you know, and so I would always say, what are the qualifiers? What are the things that make someone more of the side who's German, Norwegian, or more that's, you know, Mexican-American, Native American? What does that mean? So those are the elements that are underlying a lot of the experience which is put into this poem. Because when I came up, that I could see, there weren't as many kids who were of mixed race, multiracial backgrounds. And so you didn't really, I felt the pressure to have to identify as one or the other. And you never quite fit. And so, but now, I think demographics have changed considerably. To me, that gives me the hope that the dialogue will shift. Everything I write initially is for self because it's a processing tool for me. And then I risk it by putting it out to other people to say, if you find this of use, if this is something that can help you, like it helped me, I share it in that manner.
That was Tina Bowling. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life on our website, wisconsinlife.org, and on Facebook. I'm Erica Janik.
Now, slippery roads and other harsh weather conditions are a large obstacle for drivers, sure, but also for companies designing autonomous cars. A group of researchers in Finland have designed a self-driving car made specifically for demanding weather conditions. Michael J. Koren is a technology writer for Quartz based in Silicon Valley. Michael has reported on a lot of stories about self-driving cars here in the U.S. Michael, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, yeah, I see tests of self-driving cars happening in, you know, big cities in the Southwest a lot. How big a challenge is it to get them out there in, say, a snowy conditions or lots of snowbanks on the side of the road?
Well, harder than you might think. A lot of these companies are based in California, or as you say, they're testing in the Southwest or in Florida. So unless you're in Michigan or a handful of the northern states, they really haven't had a lot of time in the snow or even sleet.
And what kind of technology do cars use to see, I'll put that in quotes, what's going on around them?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's actually a mix of technologies. So typically what they're using is radar, lasers, something called LiDAR, cameras, just like a visual camera, and then ultrasonic sensors that are for short-range detection, as well as using telemetry. So they're actually looking at a map at the same time that they're absorbing all this other data coming at them.
And I understand this LiDAR is a pretty common one. It helps get a 3D image of what's going on in the world around this self-driving car. That maybe doesn't work so well for snow, where a snowbank might look like a wall or the car doesn't know what, I guess.
Right. So you can imagine you're shooting a light essentially out at various objects, and then it's bouncing back and telling the sensor what's there. So ice, water can act almost like a mirror or scatter a lot of that light. And so it confuses the sensors, and it's very difficult to tell exactly what it's seen in front of it. And so what they've done is they've tried to make a mix of radar, which actually allows them to see through precipitation or fog or snow, and then visual sensors, as well as data coming from the road and other cars around it.
Now, of course, being here in Wisconsin, the land of ice and snow, or at least for part of the year, we're interested in this project we'd read about going on in Finland, where they're trying to design a car, and I guess they have their share of snow in Finland, that's going to work in these kind of conditions. So, and I guess they're using a project using more radar than that LiDAR. Can you talk about why that's going to help them?
Sure. So what they've done is they've swapped out some of the, as you say, LiDAR using for radar. And what it does is it's essentially using electromagnetic waves to bounce a signal off of the objects. And it goes through a lot of the things that would otherwise stop a laser sensor. And they've added more of those in the front of the car. So they have a better detection what's coming at them, and they can see a wider range. Whereas the urban cars tend to have more sensors in the back and around to do better positioning for other objects that are moving away or towards them. But it's still pretty preliminary. This was their first, I think, snow-ready autonomous vehicle.
I got to level with you, Michael. I've driven non-self-driving cars where I thought they didn't test this feature in the cold, you know, where the sliding door freezes shut in freezing rain or things like that. How much are these companies really doing to make sure they're tested in, you know, a lot of different types of weather conditions?
That's a great question. So I would say not that much, to be honest. So they're still trying to solve the how do I get around San Francisco question. And eventually they'll probably get around to the Arctic or at least up into the Wisconsin area. Most of the time, that'll be fine. There won't be that much difference. But this is going to be one of the last challenges that autonomous vehicles solve, essentially, which is to drive anywhere in all conditions.
Is this something where you think the technology is going to get big? If it gets big, it'll happen first in larger cities in less snowy places?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's a debate going on right now whether this is going to happen first on highways or first in cities, and if so, what cities? I think you'll see the easy cities first. So that might be an LA, which has, you know, very distinct traffic patterns. Actually, they don't move that fast since they're usually in traffic jams. But I think it'll take a while before we see it in sort of northern cities or ones where there's a lot of chaotic traffic or hard, difficult weather conditions.
And Michael, we keep seeing headline after headline about some kind of milestone in self-driving cars. How close are we to seeing them, you know, to being in a place where a consumer could seriously think, yeah, I might have one of these in the next couple of years?
Yeah, so the U.S. federal government has a level ranking for autonomous vehicles from zero all the way up to five, which is fully autonomous. The level zero is like a Model T. The level two is sort of a Tesla autopilot, if you've ever seen that. Essentially, it can drive itself on the highway, but you have to be able to take control anytime. Level three is supposed to be here already, actually, in prototypes and maybe in the market in the next year or two. Tesla claims that by 2020, it will have a car that can drive in virtually any condition and be safer than humans. Tesla and Elon Musk in particular tends to be a little late on their predictions, but they do tend to deliver eventually. So I'd give it a couple years.
And level five is what, a car that could go without even a human in it?
You press a button and then you show up at your destination and you never have to touch the wheel.
Michael, thanks a lot for bringing us up to date on the technology.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Michael J. Koren, technology reporter at Quartz. He joined us to look at the new self-driving car models experiments, trying to adapt to snowy conditions. Now we're looking back at the best movies of 2017. Whether you're a superhero fan or a documentary geek, there were plenty of options for entertainment this year. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think was the best movie of the year? What was your favorite movie of the year? What should get an Oscar? What do you wish you'd seen, still hope to watch? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Reggie Ponder is Reggie the Real Critic. He appears weekly on Vocalo in Chicago and critiques movies for other media outlets. You can follow him on Twitter at Reggie the Real Critic. That's R-E-E-L. Reggie, welcome back to the show.
Rob, it's always great to be back. How are you this holiday season?
Really good. How are you doing?
Excellent. Just been a great, great holiday season. Just had a birthday, so I'm not going to talk about age. I know we got to get into these movies, but it's been great. Great holiday season. Thank you.
Well, happy birthday. And before we get into specific movies, big picture, good year for movies?
It was a good year for movies. I think it was a good year as it relates to the good movies. There were some movies, you know, you and I talked about this before. I mean, there's always some of those movies like, really? Did people go see that? But there were some really good movies to see, and obviously we'll talk about it. So I think it was a good year for movies for 2017.
Let's talk about a movie plot here. There's an evil empire. Their military is expanding out of control. The good guys face disaster. They're trying. They can't win. All they can do is escape and keep hope alive. All right, I just described Dunkirk, and I just described Star Wars: The Last Jedi.
That's right.
Does this mean something? This is like people are picking Dunkirk as maybe the best movie of the year, Star Wars on the road to probably being the top grossing movie of the year, and it's all about not winning but surviving. Is there a message here? I don't know.
There's definitely a message as it relates to Dunkirk. This whole thing about survival is you get really caught up in that whole story, and they tell it so well. Nolan does a great job there. And then when you talk about Star Wars, yes, there is that message about survival. How does the resistance survive? It was all about surviving. So I think you're absolutely correct in that regard. And obviously Star Wars is doing blockbusters at the box office. I do want to mention, Rob, that when you look at something like Star Wars, the critics really liked it, but the fans didn't like it as much, even though it's doing really well at the box office.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I want to focus in on Dunkirk, though, and give a little listen to it here, a moment from a very intense movie.
They need to send more ships. Every hour, the enemy pushes closer. They've activated the civilian boats. Civilians? We need destroyers.
From the trailer to Dunkirk there. This is one that I saw. I think we talked about it a little earlier in the year, Reggie. This was powerful. You came out of there feeling pretty, I think, wiped out seeing this movie.
Yeah. I think you absolutely used the right word, Rob. This one was powerful. And I would really say to folks who like movies that are about the war that this is probably, this stands the test of time with all of those other films. What I like particularly about it is that there wasn't a lot of dialogue. I mean, this wasn't a dialogue-filled film, but yet you felt the characters, you identified with the characters, and their whole plight of survival, as you just mentioned, was one that just kept you riveted and focused on the screen.
Want to check in on one now. That was Dunkirk, one that I haven't seen, keep meaning to see. Got a lot of great reviews. Here's a listen to a moment from the movie Get Out from Jordan Peele.
Do they know I'm black?
Should they?
You might want to, you know.
Mom and Dad, my black boyfriend will be coming up this weekend. I just don't want you to be shocked that he's a black man.
So Get Out, a lot of great buzz about this, Reggie. Did it deserve it?
Yes, it did. This is probably one of the most provocative films of the year. It really takes a look at racism from a very, very interesting angle. And the film will leave you talking about it long after you leave. And the fact that they encase this film in the horror genre is, I think, genius, because for many African Americans who have to traverse the social landscape, that is a horror tale. And it's really interesting how they did that and juxtaposed various characters along the way.
We're looking at the movies of 2017 with Reggie, the Real Critic. Let's go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Phil is with us in Madison. Phil, hi.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Good. What's your movie pick, Phil?
Without any question, The Shape of Water.
And tell us, what do you like about that one?
It is so brilliantly creative, and yet at the same time, nostalgic, romantic, silly. There's all kinds of inside jokes, if you're paying attention, that he puts in the television programs that people are watching, that sort of thing. So it can appeal to you on a variety of levels. I did love Get Out. And just simply because, even with Get Out's brilliant premise, I think Del Toro took us maybe just a notch further as far as presenting us with something we weren't expecting.
Phil, thanks a lot for that call. Guillermo Del Toro, the director there of The Shape of Water. This is, I understand, I haven't seen this, Reggie, about a cleaning lady who forms a relationship with a sea creature of some sort.
Yes, absolutely. And I think I'm out of a job because he just did a fantastic job talking about that movie. This film looks fantastic. The first thing is, just looks fantastic on the big screen. The second thing, as you look at the characters and how it sneaks up on you. This is one of those films that sneaks up on you where you're like, did that just happen? Really? Oh, how did they weave that story? So it's very, very interesting how a relationship develops between this cleaning lady and this sea creature and what actually happens along the way. So I think he described this beautifully, actually. And beautiful is a great word to describe the film, in fact.
Phil, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go next to Christopher with us in Rhinelander. Christopher, hi.
Hello. How are you?
Good. What's your movie pick, Christopher?
I saw the movie with my family, Wonder, a few weeks ago, and I really loved it, and I highly recommend it to everyone to go see it.
The movie Wonder. Reggie, I'm not familiar with that one.
So this is a movie where Julia Roberts is in the movie, and this is a movie where a young kid is deformed, and he has to go through a whole lot of things to kind of survive his environment, if you will, because kids talk about how he looks, a parent, you know, the stares and all of that. And interestingly, of all the movies this year, I have not seen Wonder, and it is on my list to see before the end of the year, in fact. So I haven't seen it, but the word of mouth on this one is phenomenal. And when you look at it from a box office perspective, it did really well at the box office and surprised a lot of people at the box office.
Well, Christopher, thank you so much. Christopher gives it his recommendation. I do remember seeing a trailer for that now that you've described it, Reggie. Christopher, thanks for that call. Well, from Wonder, I want to go to the superhero genre and Wonder Woman, a superhero movie that I'm seeing critics put in some of their top 10 lists, Reggie.
Yes. So it's really interesting. I loved Wonder Woman, and I loved it for a couple of reasons. The first reason is that if you're going to do a superhero film, obviously the action has to stand up, and it does in this movie, bar none. The other thing is that the story works, and I love is that the director, Patty Jenkins, was able to direct a film that was over $100 million. This was almost $150 million. We talk about diversity in Hollywood, and obviously it's really been front and center given the things that's been happening there as it relates to women and sexual abuse. It's really great to see when women are provided the same types of opportunities to direct and have the type of money, the budget that they had for this film. A really good film, did really well this year.
And I want to look at some of the other superhero movies. I saw a couple of the Marvel ones this year, Thor, Ragnarok, and Guardians of the Galaxy 2. And you know, we had, I think for a long time, Reggie, the sort of the gritty, dark superhero movies. These two, Guardians of the Galaxy sequel and Thor, the latest incarnation there, they were a blast. They were like, they were funny.
They absolutely were. So I want to mention a couple of things about the superhero movies. The first thing is that 6 of the top 11 films were superhero movies. So you had, and you mentioned them, but you had Logan, Justice League, Wonder Woman, Spider-Man, Thor, and Guardians of the Galaxy. Then when you look at about 3 or 4 of them were considered almost like comedies. And people say, why? Well, there are really 2 reasons for that. The first is that you can only go so far and blow them up, bang them up. You can only go so far. And so after a while, everybody's just trying to one-up each other. And you get kind of tired of that. The second thing is that to expand your audience is that when you start to have some humor and some character development, you actually expand your audience and actually invite some of the women into those franchises. So they did a good job with that. My favorite was Guardians of the Galaxy, and I want to say that I did not love Thor. And the reason I didn't is because I felt they tried to be Guardians of the Galaxy.
I could see that.
You know, so that was it for me.
And two big Jeffs in these movies, Jeff Goldblum in Thor, and it was Jeff Bridges, right, in Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's right.
In interesting
very
roles.
Very good, Rob. Very good.
I spot these themes, man.
That was good. That's good. I didn't even think of that one. Man, I'm not going to come back on ever again. You guys are killing me.
We'll have you back. We're talking about the best movies of 2017 right now with Reggie Ponder, a.k.a. Reggie the Real Critic. He stays with us, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What was your favorite movie in 2017? What was the best movie, if that's a different thing in your mind, for 2017? What is still on your list, or do you need a recommendation from Reggie? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation, get to more of your calls coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about the best movies of the year with Reggie Ponder, also known as Reggie the Real Critic. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What was your favorite movie of the year? What maybe let you down when you were looking forward to? What should we be talking about for Oscar and other award considerations? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Here's one I saw kind of accidentally, Reggie. Here's a listen to a bit of Lady Bird.
I hate California. I want to go to the East Coast.
I want to go where culture is, like
how
New
in the
York,
world did I raise such
or at least
snob.
Connecticut or New Hampshire, really? Where writers live in the
get
woods.
Get into those schools anyway.
Mom,
you should just go to City College.
So Lady Bird, Reggie, I'd overheard somebody saying something good about it. I had time to see a movie. I didn't know anything about it, didn't know what it was about. Saw it. I liked it. What did you think?
So when you say you liked it, why did you like this one, Rob?
I had no expectations. I knew the name, and somebody had said something good about it, and I didn't know what to expect. And it was just there have been a lot of coming-of-age stories out there. I thought this is a pretty good one. I thought this is something that, this might be a teenager's life. I didn't think it was super contrived or overly dramatic or, I don't know, it felt sincere, I guess.
I think they did a couple of things really well with this film, is that they didn't get overly dramatic in it, but they had some dramatic moments, in it, where there's this one scene where she's talking about the house that she loves. And I don't want to give it away, but she says she lives in this house, but she really doesn't live in this house. And it, to me, that is a great example of how teenagers dream and hope, and she really wanted to get out of that community. And I think they captured it phenomenally. And the tension between her and her mother, but the love between her and her father, it really was a very good film. Not my favorite, but it was a very good film.
And by the way, we've got a caller who corrected me, not Jeff Bridges. It was Kurt Russell in Guardians of the Galaxy.
You can take my
movie critic credentials right back now, Reggie.
Yeah, that's
sorry.
Right. Kurt,
and my
Kurt
Jeff
Russell,
theory
right.
is shot to heck.
We can always use some help every once in a while. See, that's great. The people are listening, so that's excellent.
That's true. We'll go back to our callers now. Randy is with us in Madison. Randy, hi.
Good evening. I just wanted to be a little grinchy here. Last year had a really disturbing statistic, which is that of the top 10 grossing movies, not a one was set in the real world. They were either superhero, cartoons, or the Star Wars thing. And I'm wondering, and I just find that, like I said, pretty disturbing. I'm wondering if that's going to be the case this year, too. Is there any real world movie that is going to make the top 10, or are they going to be the cartoons and the Star Wars?
Randy, interesting. I know a Beauty and the Beast is about to get knocked off probably by Star Wars. There's superhero ones. Are there any? I don't think Dunkirk was a top grossing movie, Reggie.
No.
Does anything meet Randy's criteria there?
No, none of them do. Because when you look at the top 10, you have things like Fate of the Furious, Logan, Despicable Me, Thor, It, Spider-Man, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Star Wars, Wonder Woman, and Beauty and the Beast.
And, hold on. You're telling me Fast and Furious isn't in the real world?
No, it's not in the real world. What they've done with that franchise, it definitely is not in the real world. They've moved that movie from real world stuff to now they're almost superhero, at least superhuman in some of the things that they do. What I'll say about Randy's comment is that many people go to the movies to escape. So you're very rarely are you going to see that real world movie be the top grossing because people are going to escape. You've had a hard week, and you say, "Hey, I just want to go have some fun and let it loose."
Thanks a lot for the call, Randy, at 800-642-1234. Want to take a moment to look at a documentary. I think this is one you had liked earlier in the year. I listened to a trailer from the documentary Step.
We're in Baltimore City. They come home to no lights, not having food in the refrigerator, not having a refrigerator at all. But when they come to step practice, all of those things are erased out of their mind. So they can make it through life.
So tell us about Step, Reggie.
So this is about some young girls in a high school in Baltimore, and they're in a step team. And if you don't know step, let's just say it's a dance team. So they're in a dance team, and they're just trying to make it through life. I mean, they're in an impoverished community, and their teachers and administrators really, really care about them. And we get to follow these young girls as they're on the step team, kicked off the step team because they're not doing their academics at the level that they need to be, how they get back on the step team, how they form a family, and how they succeed and the ones that succeed and some that don't. And so it's a heart-wrenching story, but you are absolutely invested when you watch this. I totally recommend this for people to check it out if you haven't, to check this one out.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Lincoln is with us in Two Rivers. Lincoln, hi.
Hello.
What'd you want to bring up, Lincoln?
I just wanted to bring up what my favorite movie of 2017 was.
And it was?
It was actually kind of two movies. It was both Star Wars The Last Jedi and Dunkirk, because you said previously that the whole theme of survival is kind of relevant in this modern age because it's kind of a very primitive, in my mind, it's very primitive that it's the hunt. I'm going nowhere with this. But what I'm trying to say here is that survival is pretty much the human instinct.
Oh, I got you, Lincoln. Thanks. So kind of, I think he's going for kind of a primal link to this idea of survival in this flashy movie and in this very gritty, dark movie, Dunkirk. What do you think, Reggie?
Yeah, you and I talked about that a little earlier, and I don't think you can go wrong with either of those movies. I do really quickly want to mention, because I know we're coming up on time, but I do want to mention a couple of movies, and particularly my favorite movie of my second favorite movie of the year, which is Three Billboards. Have you seen that one, Rob?
I haven't. I've seen the trailers. It's Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, right, with Frances McDormand, who's awesome.
Who's awesome and should absolutely get every award that comes her way. This is a fantastic film. It's about a mother who wants to have justice for her daughter who was murdered and raped, but she doesn't feel like she's getting that justice. So she takes out these three billboards, which challenges the police department and particularly the police chief, who is played by Woody Harrelson, to do something. And it causes such an uproar in that community. And people are mad at her for doing it, and it makes problems for her children and all the family around her. The way they tell this story, the characters are quirky. There's some interesting things that happen. But Woody Harrelson's character brings it all together where he actually helps these people realize their potential or find their direction and where they want to go. This is a must-see, You should check that one out.
And you said that was your second favorite. Which one was your first? Was it one
so
of your
Get Out, Get Out is my Get favorite, okay. And it's by a hair. I mean, and when I say by a hair, if Three Billboards gets all the awards, I would not be upset because it is very well done. And it's told in such a different way. It will surprise you. Some people call it a comedy because there are some comical things that happen here, but it is a dramedy, if you will, and I really like that. So those are my favorite two for the year.
Okay, and in just our last few seconds, what's one you're looking forward to in 2018, Reggie?
Wow, what am I looking forward to? I haven't even thought about looking forward to 2018 yet because I honestly, Rob, you know, voting season is coming up, so I still have a few movies that I have to catch up on. I haven't seen Coco, which I need to see when we talk about animated films, so I absolutely need to see that in order to have a real opinion about what happens for the animated films this year. I have not seen Wonder, which we just talked about. And then there's a couple of films from a documentary perspective that I want to see as well. So I'm actually trying to do some catch up, so I can't tell you what I really want to see for 2018. If I can, really quickly, I do want to say that the breakout role for me, there were two breakout roles for me this year.
Quick.
And one of them is in Baby Driver. Mm-hmm. I think that his role in Baby Driver was absolutely...
Reggie, we gotta get out of here, but we'll check in with you on that again. That's Reggie, the Real Critic, looking at the best movies of 2017.